Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down. Nobody wants to show you how. So if you're locked on your own, you can never surrender. And if your life won't lead you home, you can. Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down.
Good evening, and welcome to our 16th podcast of the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. You can call in at 516-531-9643, 516-531-9643, or you can listen live at blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. Show will also be on SoundCloud this evening on the Never Give Up Show. I have to say that our guest that we have tonight, she did not give up and has some story. Carissa Daniels is a survivor of child abuse, raised in a home with domestic violence. Her escapes were reading and music. At the age of 11, she began a solo career as a singer, guitar player, and songwriter. She is also a classically trained lyric soprano and has acted in music theater as well. It was after a music rehearsal that she was stalked and then overpowered by a criminal who held her prisoner for hours, raping and assaulting her. Eventually, he left and she survived the attack. Unlike three of his other victims, who he brutally murdered in cold blood, eventually he was executed for his crimes. Boy, am I glad to hear that. Prior to the assault, she was on the verge of creating a successful career in contemporary Christian music. A few months later, she was left disabled after a nearly fatal car crash. She jokes that when those in the know in the music business told her it was till she had a hit, she had no idea it would come from a pickup truck hitting her at 45 miles an hour. At least you have a sense of humor, Carissa. Shoving her little Mustang forward and sideways into oncoming traffic. Carissa has gone on and she built a life for herself. It wasn't the one she had dreamed of. She graduated from broadcast school and began working in radio. She then met someone, but the man of her dreams was actually the creator of her nightmares, as she became the victim of domestic violence. When her miracle daughter was three, they went underground after he threatened her life and eventually moved to a place where they knew no one. Wanting to help others, she was certified as a victim advocate, but because of her disabilities, she was unable to work in a shelter. And because her ex would periodically go looking for them and harass them, she got online seeking support and began volunteering to help other victims to get and stay safe, start over, and build successful new lives. I'm going to stop here because there's so much that Carissa has gone on to do after her horrific start to her young life. I can relate to a lot of what you're saying here as far as domestic violence and stalking and all that kind of stuff. And usually many of our listeners can too. You know, never giving up and going on from having gone through such horrific things in your life is the most courageous thing I can't even imagine. You started at such a young age, but you took it and you ran with it in an amazing direction. And now you're out there advocating and doing amazing things. So I usually like to thank whoever introduced us. Somehow I think someone tagged her in one of my shows. So whoever it was, thank you. Anyway, without further ado, I'm going to bring on Carissa Daniels, our guest this evening.
Hi there.
Hey.
I have been through a whole lot.
Did you hear me?
Did
you hear me okay? Do you hear me okay?
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
I've been through a whole lot, but for me, it's more a point of reference and a place to build from. And I had to learn to persevere. That's the big thing. And if we can learn to utilize that skill, which most of us have, sometimes it's more buried than others, then we can do amazing things. And I think that's really the takeaway that I would like to give tonight, is the fact that no matter who you are, no matter where you're at, you don't have to stay back there. Yes, it may be hell right now. And trust me, I know what hell is. The criminal that assaulted me, his name was Charles Rodman Campbell. You can look him up online. Alone was enough to have sidetracked a lot of people. And it did sidetrack me for quite a while. That part of my story I've only been sharing in the last probably 2 years, maybe three, because it was so buried on top of everything else. And I couldn't deal with it. The whole point of that being that if we learn how to do this a little bit at a time, it's like peeling an onion. We keep working and we keep building towards healing. Healing is a journey. It's not a destination. And we spend our whole lives on that journey and building toward a future. Right now, because of the pandemic, it's so hard, I think, because we've all had to be in suspended animation for a year. And it's been hard to look past that. I have health problems on top of it, so I still can't quite look past it. But I'm hopeful, and I'm finding ways to adapt. And that's another real key, I think, to all of this, is learning how to adapt, finding ways to build a life in the best way that you can. The thing that's really cool about having gone through all of that stuff, when I left my home because of domestic violence with my three-year-old daughter, we spent about 4 months underground. And we moved to a place we knew no one. And in doing so, what happened was I had to start over from nothing. And yes, it's a daunting process. But the flip side of that is I could build my life however I wanted. I could pick and choose. What do I want to be? what do I want to do? What do I want to be involved in? And it's really funny because the place I ended up was exactly the place that I had actually years earlier looked at and said, you know, this would be a really neat place to live. There's this whole arts community and all of the things that I loved, a whole lot of music, a whole lot of theater. All of those things were in this little area where I wound up living. And in the midst of tears, after we moved into our little house, I sat there and I went, okay, I had no supports. There was no online social media yet. This was 24 years ago, actually, now. So there was no online social media, none of that. And YWCA in my area had done what they could to help us, but there was not much they could do. I knew no one. And I spent probably the first 2 years in tears most of the time. And it was just loneliness, and it was poverty. It was everything. But one day, everything changed because I said, okay, you're here now. How do you take it from here? Where do you go from here? Mm-hmm. How are you going to make this work?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, okay, well, what do I really want? Who am I? Because we lose that in the abuse. We get so used to being a chameleon and trying to be what everybody else wants us to be that we lose our own selves. And I had to dig mm-hmm. deep down into the bottom of me because I was disabled in the car accident, so I hadn't been able to sing for quite a while. And I miss performance so much. It's been a part of me since I was 5 years old. I knew by the time I was five, I was going to be a singer. And I was doing it. And I missed that so desperately. And I went, okay, well, how can I get some piece of that back? And right. I had won a title. I do communication skill-based competition. And I use that as a platform to educate people about domestic violence and poverty mm-hmm. and those kinds of issues. And I was invited on a local radio show. And the local radio show was wonderful, and we had a blast. And I got contacted afterwards, and he said, what do you think about coming and working for me? I said, are you kidding? I would love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that started 2 years in radio in the town that I had moved to.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened a whole lot of doors that wouldn't have been open to me otherwise.
Okay.
And I began reaching out and touching the lives of others around me. And I had won this title. I wound up, it took me before all was said and done, 10 years from the time I won my first title, which was before I walked out the door, leaving the domestic violence and having to rent shelter, until the time that I actually competed at the competition that I had been awarded a title for 10 years prior. When all that happened, when I finally was able to compete, I utilized those skills that I had been working on in my new area as an actress, as a musical theater person. I was able to utilize all of that and create a monologue that basically turned into me 10 years prior. And in 3 minutes' time, I was able to reach beyond a lot of the what ifs and everything else that people have when they find out you're a domestic violence survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And was able to show them a living demonstration of what a domestic violence survivor goes through when she leaves. Everybody always asks, why don't you just leave? Like that solves our problem.
Mm-hmm.
We know as survivors, it just opens a whole other can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
But in this process, I was able to educate a whole lot of people that I couldn't have reached otherwise. The crown and banner make me memorable and help me to be able to connect with people in a way where barriers are down. I have had numerous victims come up to me in public, even when I'm not wearing my crown and banner, interestingly, but they recognize me and they've asked for help and they've gotten out. And in one case, not only did the survivor that I spoke with get out, her kids got out as well a few weeks later. That's the power in the crown and banner. That's why I'm doing something that a lot of people would say, why are you bothering to do that? That's just a waste. You know, it's not a waste. It's saving lives. And it's giving me the ability to reach above where I was able to reach before. I've been working legislatively on the laws to help change laws, protect kids, protect victims, and help survivors to build success after leaving. These are things that those doors opened in part because of the titles that I've had. And being involved now in an international competition is a really neat thing in the sense that I've always felt, we know that domestic violence is a global issue. It was a pandemic before we ever heard of COVID. It's been a pandemic for generations. But the thing is, nobody is really addressing it the way it needs to be addressed on a global level. The United Nations is trying, but they've got a huge barrier there to not be able to do the things that they know need to happen. And when this opportunity came up, I actually had, I thought, quit competing. And a friend contacted me and said, hey, I'm involved in this thing. Would you consider doing it? And because another friend had actually started that particular competition and she had passed, we had lost her. Mm. I knew I had to do it. I did it for Angela and I did it for me because that's what I needed to do. That was 3 years ago. And last year I got first runner up, missed the international elite title by 3 points. So this year I am doubled down, even more determined that this is what I'm going to do because I know the doors it opens. I know what it can do and how it can help people. The work that I started doing online, on social media, there was a website that used to be the largest women's networking website in the world. It was called Cafe Mom. And many, many, many people were on that site. Well, there was a group on that site that was a domestic violence group. And I actually found it right after it formed. I had gotten some stuff going on, and my ex periodically rears his ugly head. And when he does, I look for support. And I was trained as a victim advocate, but I could not use that. And I got on looking for support, and up pops this brand new group, Domestic Violence Survivors, The Power of Being Free. I got into the group, and there was, I don't know, a little over a dozen people probably in the group at the time. And there was, the first thing that I read was a message from a woman who said she was terrified because she knew her husband was going to kill her. But she was equally terrified of going into shelter. And she knew that was her only option to be safe, keep her kids safe, and protect her family. And she said, is there anybody there who can help demystify this for me and help me do what I need to do? And I read that and I went, I have all the tools. And then a part of me said, you know, this is the first place I've landed on this entire site. I kind of need to know a little bit of the lay of the land before I do this. So I spent about 20 minutes, and I was literally haunted by this thing. I mean, I could see it in my head.
I missed the what was the site? I heard the overall site, but what was the?
The site was Cafe Mom, and the group was called Domestic Violence Survivors: The Power of Being Free. And after 20 minutes, no, it does not, sadly. Although a lot of the people that were on there have found me on Facebook. And so a lot of them I'm still in touch with. And, you know, it's been fun because not only do we help each other and support each other in our growth, in our healing, I've watched kids grow up that I've now known for 15 years and, in fact, one of them I'm thinking of was like 3 and is now just about graduating high school. It's been an amazing experience. But I read one message, just one, and it haunted me, and I had to come back. And I literally remember telling myself, I'm in, as my fingers hit that keyboard. And that was a life-changing moment for me. Because I answered one message and told her what I knew and what I had experienced. And that one message turned into thousands of messages and then hundreds of thousands of messages. And this thing was so much bigger than I ever imagined when I did that. It changed all of our lives. I wound up creating a whole new form of domestic violence victim advocacy. This was 15 years ago.
Is there a website, a page? Because I was trying to find something.
Yeah, there's nothing left. What they did was they had this incredible site for women, and they lost funding. And they lost funding very abruptly, and when they did, everything went away. So now if you go to cafemom.com, you'll see a little news site, usually has very simple stories and not a whole lot else. And that's all that's left.
Because you actually can start a Facebook. Sorry, go on. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that I actually have saved screenshots of some of the stuff that we did just as samples of this is what I've done. But we lost so much. I had so much in my journals. If I could just have my journals back, I'd be thrilled. Because not only was there a lot of information there to help other women to be able to survive, but there was a lot of stuff on my own healing and a lot of stuff that I would have loved to include in the book that I'm writing. And a lot of it is just gone, you know, it just went away.
Well, you know, first of all, there's a lot of groups out there. I don't know if you're aware of what similar to what you're talking about, where I posted the show. I didn't tag you in all of them, but I can invite you to them, or you can start your own. Starting a Facebook page, I mean, it's time consuming and it's, but you can reach out to some of those people you remember and send them an invite and get them back. Because, you know, I always say when I do a show, and we have Marianne Petrie here with us, I'm going to bring her on shortly, who also wrote a book. And actually, most of my guests came through her. I did a show with her on her podcast, Slam the Gavel, and I was my complaints were about the broken system, and you know, she let me rant and rave for an hour, and you know, my message is always if I could reach one person, and I did. I actually got a whole bunch of messages. And, of course, I had to make them prove that they were real. you know, that's what we try to do, is at least reach one person, because that person reaches someone else and they reach someone else. but you know, I'm in touch with those few people, but I've invited them, all of them, to different pages, and you know, we're a huge community of advocators, and it's all literally social media. I mean, that's how I connected with you somehow. So, you know, you can make your own page and you can start all over, or you can write in a lot of these pages, because there's so many groups that have...
Well, I'm always open to, you know, being involved, or at least being a part of other groups.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, a lot of the people that I worked with are at a different place in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is they've moved on and healed.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're in a different place, they don't need that hands-on,
mm-hmm.
really close support that they once needed. And for
mm-hmm.
a lot of people, this is such a painful experience
mm-hmm.
that they don't always want to come back. And I totally get that. Like I said, for me, my past, which is in a lot of ways horrific, is more a point of reference than it is anything else. A lot of people can identify with little bits and pieces of what I've been through. And that's why I tell that part of the story. It's not because I still am living there, but
mm-hmm.
because, okay, this is where I come from. And if you can identify with this, then I may be able to reach you and help you just like somebody else helps me. And, you know, it's part of this grand chain where we all work together. That's the whole purpose of why we're all here, is to help
yep.
each other. It's something that's been lost in the last few years, and we have to get it back.
Well, yeah. Well, I know that I've been doing this advocating for 3-4 years now, and it's grown. And I've
mm-hmm.
met my biggest support system through social
Absolutely.
Media.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many people out there that I hope are listening, if not even call in. Somebody said they had a hard time calling in. Did you have a hard time calling in?
I did not. I try to always be a few minutes early. So.
Yeah, no, but no, she was on and she said she has to use a landline. I don't know if she's going to call back, but... anyway, I want to give out our number again, 516-531-9643. We're also live on blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. And my show's up tonight, Never Give Up Show. Like I said, I will have it on SoundCloud tonight. These shows are all archived on Blog Talk Radio. So they could be, you know, saved. Whatever the link I sent you today is out there, and you know we're here to share stories and help others, and you know, reach that one person who is not in a good place or is in a good place or needs somewhere to vent or somewhere to talk. And again, most of us are already in a healthy place. It is a journey. It's a continuous journey, and you know, you got to start somewhere. So,
absolutely.
With that, I'm going to bring on my friend, Marianne. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I was
any questions?
Listening in.
Carissa?
Well. Oh, I was listening into it. I feel so bad that you had to go through that. And getting the word out is so important, and Bailey is doing a fantastic job with that. And, you know, we need more people like you to get the word out. And social media is the only way, it seems.
Oh, social media is an amazing resource. And when you think about how far it reaches, the work that I do, I actually have two names for it. The first one is Advocacy Without Borders, because what we do is a global thing on social media. And that's one of the amazing things, is it doesn't matter where you're at. we can still connect. And the other half of what I do is survivor to success. And it's about, once again, reaching those people and helping them to become successful in spite of what they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely,
you don't have...
That's excellent.
Yeah, go on, Marianne. It's okay.
Oh, no, I was just saying that's excellent.
So you work, you are part of an advocacy, victims advocacy group, right?
I'm involved.
And they have a website, you said.
I'm involved in a number of them at this point. My website is done right now, so it's not up at this point. We're working on getting it up. So it shouldn't be, hopefully, too much longer, and we'll have it up on there. I have a lot of people that approach me directly through Facebook, just at Carissa Daniels. And I have been able to sometimes be able to connect them with the help they need, regardless of where they're at. I've had situations where I've had to reach clear across country and, you know, do what needs to happen. It was one that I'm thinking of. The woman was in a place and she'd spent months in shelter, got into her new place. She was in a small state, and several small states had banded together to create a program to benefit domestic violence survivors and help them to get started over. And she contacted me 5 days after she got into her place, and some bureaucrat had said, oh, no, you're not in my state. You can't do this, and didn't know how it worked, didn't know the laws. Thankfully, her landlord had said, no, you're here. Stay put. We'll figure this out. But she had herself, her laptop, and her sleeping bag. That was it.
Mm.
And I found out she was in this situation at 8 o'clock on a Friday night. That was 8 o'clock my time, so it was 11 her time. And I started making phone calls. And, of course, everybody's voicemail was full and got nobody. Finally, at 6 the next morning, I got a hold of a gentleman, and he said, you're where? Told him I was on the West Coast, and really? And it's been kind of fun because a lot of the time they don't realize the reach of social media until something like this happens. And in this particular case, he understood how the system worked. He'd had things happen before. He said, I gotcha. He said, get a hold of your person, give her my information. I got her. And she sent me a message later, and she said, I had the first hot meal I've had in a week because we were able to make that connection. This is the power of social media. This is what makes it so amazing and enables us to do things that we never dreamed possible a few years ago.
True. Very true.
So when I was training victim advocates, it got to the point there were literally thousands of people in the group and it was just me. And I finally said, okay, I got to figure out how I can make this work. And I talked to a couple of my mentors and they helped me, and I created a whole new form of advocacy, and then I had to train them. And we wound up spending 75 hours on training, and then they'd go into the group, and they could tag team, and they could get a hold of me if they needed help. And so that's what they wound up doing. And Independence Day, and this was years ago now, but Independence Day, I started getting a huge number of messages, and I went online to check, and it was my girls, and they said, we need help. There was a woman who had been being beaten for 3 days. She had a 3-month-old baby. She was locked in her house and had no working phone. All she had was the computer. And I said, okay, first thing we got to do is get you out of there. And we created a plan. She went to the back of the house as far as she could get from him. She wound up putting up a blanket and breaking a window as quietly as she could break it, then put that blanket down so that the glass would not hurt her. And she had strapped her baby to the front of her so she knew he was okay. The last thing I heard was her saying, I'm going now. And then you pray because there's nothing else you can do. Mm-hmm. And for 24 hours, I did not know what had happened or if they were okay or anything else. The next day, I got a message. She says, you want to know what happened? I said, absolutely. She says, first of all, I'm safe. Turns out he was wanted for felony domestic violence assault in another state. She got to the police. The police went out, arrested him, and today the guy's in prison. And that never could have happened if it wasn't for social media. The power of this is incredible. And I'm so glad to see so many groups springing up all over, because that's what we need. The more people we have helping, the better. So, and what we did, this was, like I said, almost 15 years ago. So it was quite a while ago, but
yeah.
At that point,
well, 15
I
years
find
ago,
anybody
nobody
else.
Knew. 15 years ago, we didn't know, I mean,
yes.
I didn't know I was an abused woman living,
right.
You know, it's 27 years that I would have been married, I think, 26 years, something like that, 26 years that I would be going on my 26th year. I'm separated, divorced 6 years. So 15 years ago, quite some time ago, we did not know, you know, to me,
right.
It was anger, it was mood swings, it was, who knew?
Right.
You know, and we didn't know about these kind of things. So, you know, my girlfriends and I always say, if we only knew back then that narcissism and sociopathy and all this kind of stuff, you know, we could have saved ourselves from so much, you know,
right.
such heartache. But,
right.
you know, psychologists were very vague. You know, therapists, marriage counselors, they knew, you know, they knew what they knew by the book, but they weren't certified.
Right. And the Internet itself at that point was such a different place. It was new.
Yes.
For a lot of people.
Do I want to
Marianne, do you have any other questions?
Oh, I don't. No. Mm-mm.
Okay. It's so nice to talk to you.
On the whole. She's amazing.
Okay. Nice talking to you. Nice talking to you both.
Don't go anywhere. I'm going to bring Kathy from Maine. Welcome back, Kathy.
Well, thank you for your patience. I am in a techie... isolation area here. So it took me a little while to get through, but I did hear a little now. I will tell you, I have not been in a domestic violence adult situation. So I've always, and I've learned a lot since I have been connecting with people who have been, because I grew up in one, but I got the hell out of my house and, you know, I just was gone. I will tell you, I knew people can be real jerks, and I didn't want to be involved in. So when I was on the road, there was no way I was going to get anybody to tell me what to do, how to live my life, or where to go, or anything. I was completely against that. So I did have a couple of situations, and I tried to make a plan ahead of time. And that is, if you're in a vehicle and someone's taking you to the second location, how to get out of there. And I employed it once. I had to employ it once. And I, of course, you see, we didn't have cell phones. I mean, I was on the road in the 70s. So, you know, I was born. I'm old now. But, you know.
No, you're not.
But, I'll be 69 if I make it to October. So I've been around a while. But I tell you what, the I've got a whole new opportunity for me. I hope I'm living well. I quit smoking cigarettes. That's pretty cool. And I just did that, so I might be a little bit antsy-pantsy now, which is weird because I snuck them. I love my husband dearly, but he couldn't stand cigarettes. So anyway, I'd smoke them out the window. You know, so. And now I don't have to sneak them out the window because he's not here anymore. And I found myself smoking too many. And, you know, I think the sneaking was more fun than the smoking, so... That's not happening. That's not happening anymore.
So fun.
Anyway, I had 32 years of wonderful, loving marriage with a sweet husband, but it took me a long time. I will say I had I became a born-again cherry in my mid-30s. And I think you can kind of figure out what that meant. But one of the, and that's why I'm curious about how you're going to help someone. I know, I think I mentioned this to Carissa before, because those of us who've been out have probably been approached with someone who's got your best interests at heart. I can assure you, I didn't trust anybody that had my best interest at heart, and I would take off like a bat out of hell and did every single time. And one of the things, if you're in a vehicle, that I had been told is to take the keys out of the ignition and toss them out the car. The guy's going to have to, you know, stop the vehicle or something. Look for the keys. That kind of pissed the guy off. But I couldn't get him out of the car. I couldn't keep the keys were the wrong direction. I mean, it was a plan. I tried to implement. At least you got a plan. So he got ticked off at me for, you know, trying to mess with his truck and threw me out the truck when it was moving. That was weird. Well, it wasn't very pleasant. But I figured, you know, there was no way I was not going to, I was going to just say I can't do anything. I was going to go, but, you know, he came after me. That was quite an experience. But I will tell you that I thought for a while that there were these drugs inside these forms because I couldn't understand why I was so hot and big and strong. I mean, what did I just get injected by all these things? Because this guy's coming after me, and I'm like 100 pounds, 110 maybe. I'm, looking, I think I was 18, maybe. And yeah, I wasn't quite 19 yet. He was a big truck driver, a lot bigger than I was. And I figured that, you know, I couldn't do anything, but I could. You know, you never know. And, then I figured, oh, this must be a, you know, hand from God making me so strong, be able to toss this frigger in the air. And then I found later, in hindsight, that there's this stuff called adrenaline, and it'll be there if you need it. And that's what it was. And then, of course, I had to leave, and and there you're worried that you're hurt. I don't want to hurt anybody. I just didn't want to be hurt, you know. So I got out of there. And then I had to hitch the other direction. And, of course, this isn't even this country, so my language was a little better in the other driver than the first driver. I won't mention the country, but I'm not going to go there for a visit, I can assure you. But then, even though it's been a long time. But I didn't stay to see what happened. I was just hoping that someone found him and got him out of there because I'm the here, and I don't think I would be if it wasn't for that adrenaline that happened to come at the same time that I happened to get out of there. It just, you know, you never know. So I just felt, after having done a couple of things as my young adulthood after I left home, because I had a very abusive home, childhood, and there was no way these people in the world out here were going to, once I got out of what I considered, you know, my own control, I was not going to give it up for anybody, you know, ever. So I was very averse to, you know, a program here to help you. In fact, the government is so crazy. I had my passport taken at one point. You know, I know it was taken by who and what they did with it, but, you know, I really hadn't, you know, I hadn't offered enough, I suppose. But in any event, they said, well, you can go to the American Council and get another one. I said, yeah, I guess so. So I went to the American Council to get another one, and they wouldn't give me one because they said my name is on a list. I was supposedly wanted by all kinds of people because, you see, when you leave home at a young age and you don't come back and write anybody or check in or turn around. But I did hear, and I'm sorry, I don't want to get on my story. This is Carissa's show. I'm sorry. But I tell you, I did hear one thing before I got so messed up with the techie thing that I did relate to, as you always say, you relate to things, was the coming back. Sometimes I think it's hoovered into the family, because if I stay too close to where my family of origin is, it's very, very difficult for me. So, but my grandfather had a very, very serious desire, because the military had taken over Greece, and he was very politically active in this thing, and he wanted the United States to push on getting Papadopoulos out there, and of course they eventually did, but it was very rough there while people were under it, complete military rule. I mean, I remember hearing people say that you can't, you know, they can take your rights away, but you always can think, you can always think. Well, that's not really true in a lot of places, because if you're thinking freely, you might have the mistake of talking of what you're thinking and it leave your lips.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, you
Kathy,
could lose your daughter.
I can
shut up and let
you
go.
Question.
No, sorry, honey. Don't shut up.
No, you had a very good question that you texted me, and I said you can call in and ask.
Oh, I didn't ask that question, did I?
No. So why didn't I redirect you? You had a very good question.
Yes, you can redirect about, me, because, see, I'm as bad as anybody else. I'm going on. Let's see.
No, you're. I'm
oh,
the
yes.
same way.
When
we
you're
all
in
go,
the, so,
all
when,
go,
this is, I had to look and see what it is. When you are in the abusive relationship, because, yeah, the two things were getting, coming back and doing something, but also, you were speaking, Carissa, about social media being great, and social media being great to connect, it is. But isn't it difficult for those people who cannot? It's like I said, I wasn't in this kind of situation, and certainly not during the time when you had any social media. But isn't it difficult for the spouse who's being, and I'm going to put it both ways, overwhelmingly it's the guy who put his thumb on the woman, but not, you know, not just them, but you know
right.
what I mean, all of them. But isn't it difficult for her to then get to the social media? Isn't isolating the spouse one of the major issues with abusive relationships?
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge tool that they use. And one of the things that I have always told the victims that I work with is, I've given them a list of ways that are safer to get online. The top of my list is your public library. The reason why? Because if you go to the library, you're using their computers. There's no way that that can be traced.
Yeah.
You create a whole new profile.
Yeah.
Just for the domestic violence related stuff.
Yeah.
Completely different password. Completely different everything. You can even use a safe name, which I highly recommend. And you create this
mm-hmm.
safe spot, and then you can only
access that.
So
you can make your plan.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So
uh-huh.
you go to the library, or you go to a friend's, and it's a friend's who he can't access that computer.
I just
do
hear
not
it so
use
bad.
Your own computer or your own phone if you have any other options. And
yeah.
that is because there are programs out there, and Kathy is probably
mm-hmm.
aware of this, but there are programs out there that can keylog, that can get in and sneak in and get access to
all of your information, from your password to past conversations and the whole nine yards. And that means they have access to your plan. If they have access to that, guess what? You're not safe.
Right. Right. I guess the red flags and getting the victims. I've learned a lot. I really have, because I must say I'm an abuse, a childhood sexual abuse incest survivor as a child, and they said they had a group here, and I went, oh man, it'd be nice to find some other people around this area, and there must have been five wonderful, all women, and they were all domestic abuse running from it. They had a home there, a shelter, and where they leave their children and stuff. It was really very sad, and it just seems the best is prevention, and it's so hard, isn't it?
It's so hard.
I suppose,
really,
because the people come in and you just don't know. I'm just pleased that I was able to, you know, avoid that. I mean, I'm glad.
Well, and it's doubly hard, because one of the things that I tell people, one of the reasons that people don't always recognize domestic violence when they're in it. Mm-hmm. When I grew up, the abuse was out in the open. Everybody knew what was going on. I mean, for blocks, they knew what was going on at our house.
I couldn't relate.
So it was right there in the open, and I was determined to not repeat what I saw as potentially a pattern because of things that I'd seen in other family members. Mm-hmm. And I was so focused anyway on my music. My music was, that was it for me. And that was where I was going. And I was able to ignore that entire aspect of things. I didn't have relationships with males other than a couple of guy friends who, that was all they were, and I kept them in their little box, and they never came out. And I just
Kathy,
said, you
I'm
know
gonna
what?
Put you on hold, okay?
Sure.
I am.
Kathy? Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sure.
Okay. I said, you know what? I am not going to go there. Did my darndest to not repeat that pattern. But after my accident, when my life changed and I could do nothing, literally, except stay home and be in massive quantities of pain because of the injuries that I had, I realized a few years in that I needed to create some kind of a life, because doctors had forbidden me from singing because of some of my injuries. Part of what was going on was in my jaws. And so I couldn't do my music, so I had to find something else. And I realized that I was going to have to create a life. And that's when I said, you know, I'm tired of being alone. Mm-hmm. And I met someone, and that relationship was a fairly healthy relationship. It wasn't completely healthy, but fairly healthy. And then I went through the assault situation when I was held prisoner by Charles Rodman Campbell, and mm-hmm. that changed everything. I was just done and turned around and walked away. And it was probably 3 years after that that I met the guy who I later wound up having to leave.
Right.
Because of the domestic violence. But from the outside, he looked like the perfect person. He was kind. He was gentle.
Yeah.
He was all
of
the
course.
Things you look for.
The perfect charmer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I never saw any sign of abuse. None. Because
nope.
I would have run the other way like a rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been gone. But because of the fact that I didn't recognize it for what it was, and the only thing that I saw probably a year in was, you know, he would verbally put me down sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he did it, I would be on him and say, no, that's not okay. You need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But he never listened. Mm-hmm. And now we know that's a violation of boundaries. And that's mm-hmm. a huge red flag warning. But I didn't have that mm-hmm. until a year into the relationship. Mm-hmm. And things went downhill very slowly. It was like boiling a frog. You can put a frog in a pot on the stove with water. And you can turn that burner on very low. And very slowly turn it up. And because the temperature change happens so gradually, the frog doesn't realize it's going to get boiled to death. By the time it gets really, really hot, he may have one chance to jump out. And if you've got a lid on there, he's going nowhere. And that's basically what happened with me. In my case, it was my daughter that woke me up. She was 3 years old, and he started taking her and leaving for days. And I almost died having my daughter. I was told I would never have a child because I have some health problems. And for 15 years, by three different doctors, I was told, you will never get pregnant. So when I got pregnant, I risked my life for 9 months, but there was no way in hell that I was going to allow my daughter to go through that kind of stuff. And the third time he did this, he was gone for more than 3 days. He refused to answer his cell phone. Cell phones were in their infancy. They were big pluggy things. But he had one, but he refused to answer it. Refused to tell me where they were. She was three. She was not old enough to be able to say, yeah, Mom, I'm at. So it was, there was no help. So I called the crisis clinic and I called a friend of mine who was a police officer. And my friend said, this is domestic violence and you need to get out as soon as she gets back. You need to make a plan and get the heck out. And that's when I realized that 8 years down the line, I was in a domestic violence situation. It's mm-hmm. not always blatant and out in the open and easily identified, but often nope. it's underneath and hidden. Mm-hmm. And my best friend, we spent more time at each other's houses than anything, and there was only once in 8 years that she ever saw him slip and abuse me in her presence. But she did see it once. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking later, she said, no, I remember this. This is what happened. This is what I saw. And it wasn't until after I got out that I recognized how severe the abuse was. In my case, my mm-hmm. ex was special forces. And I spent 8 years hearing that he didn't need a weapon to be lethal. And he demonstrated on my own body where he could attack me, kill me, and leave no marks. Mm-hmm. And I lived with that for 8 years until my daughter came under attack. And when he was preparing to take her and go for good, in my friend the cop's words, I went, oh, heck no. And mm-hmm. that's when I said, we are out of here. Circled the date on my calendar, did not write anything there, just circled it. I knew what it was. And started ferreting things away, but not cleaning my house so he wouldn't know anything was missing. And eventually, and he'd been coming and going. He wasn't actually living at the house. And eventually that day arrived, and I got up and was preparing, and he opened the door and came in the house. And I knew I was in trouble. But I also knew that if I quit right then, I was dead. And I wasn't about to go there. And these days, I always tell the women that I work with that if when they survive their situation and get out safely, they've done an Oscar-worthy performance.
and this is why. Yes, there was abuse. Yes, I was raped. And then he expected me to take my daughter to school just like normal. So I went, okay, we'll do that. So I took my daughter to school. And while she was at school, because it was a preschool co-op in the college, I was part of the program there. So I stayed in there. And he was out in the car doing whatever. But it gave me a few minutes, and I talked to the preschool teacher, who I'd known quite well because she'd been in preschool since she was 6 months old, and I said, we're leaving today. And she just kind of looked at me and didn't say anything else, and then she announced to the class, oh, we're making yak today. And under
we're
her
making
breath,
what?
She said, yak, G-A-K. Under her breath, she told me, I'm doing this because it will help with your stress level. Now, if that's not kind of an amazing thing, I don't know what is. But she did.
Wow.
And we made yak, and we brought our yak home. And he stopped and made us eat lunch, which pizza was cardboard, and it was terrifying. But I just kept going. Got through with lunch, and he took us home and dropped us off. And I went, okay, I don't know if he's going to do this thing that he does, where he doubles around and comes back into the house or not. So after he was gone, I picked up my phone, and I called 911, and I said, I need a standby. Well, we're busy. We don't have anybody right now. I said, well, I need a standby. Well, we'll get somebody there as quick as we can. Well, they never did. But in the meantime, I had gotten everything I could to the point where I literally got a cab and went over to the local storage place and got space in storage, wound up losing everything later, but that's another story. But got out what I could get out. And while I was gone, I had taken my daughter over to a friend's house, not my bestie, because that would be the first place he'd go. But I said, do not give her to him. If anything happens, don't give her to him. And they promised they wouldn't. And I did what I needed to do. Got back after all that. I put a diaper bag, a small bag with a handful of clothes and my purse in the back of the double stroller and put my daughter in the front. And I had spent days trying to find a place for my doggies. I had two retired racing greyhounds, and they were beautiful dogs. And Rickster Doggy was so bonded to my daughter. It was just incredible to see. I put as much food and water as I could down because I didn't know when he was coming back, because I couldn't find a safe place for my dogs. And I knew that staying was not an option because I would die and my daughter would not be protected. It still breaks my heart that I had to leave those doggies behind. It's not something you get over. I walked out the door, and as I was closing the door, I went, what the heck do you tell your child when you're going underground? The words just came to me. I reached down, looked at my daughter, and got on her level, and I said, honey, I don't know where we're going, but we're going on an adventure, and you're going to be safe. And got behind the stroller and started pushing and headed for the bus stop, hoping he was not on the road. Do you know, it's been 24 years, and my daughter still remembers that conversation. And she said, Mom, I wasn't scared. I knew it was going to be okay. And that was the coolest thing for me, was realizing even later she wasn't scared, that I had gotten her through that. It was a whole involved process. We got to the
bus stop, and the bus had arrived 5 minutes before we got there. So there wasn't one for another hour. And I had contacted a shelter to get space. And when I got to the bus stop and called them and said we were on our way, they said, we've had an emergency. We had to give your spot away, but come anyway, because we'll work something out. I had to stand there and go, okay, talk about sticking out like a sore thumb. What do I do now? And I wound up calling my friend, who was the preschool teacher, and saying, this is what's going on. She says, where are you? We're coming to get you. They came, dropped everything, came and got us, took us to the meeting place, and made sure that we were safely with the person we needed to be with. And we spent 3 days in a hotel and then spent another 10 days because we couldn't get into shelter at that point because the shelters were awful. And so we spent another 10 days with a relative that he did not know. And that was an amazing experience as well. It was just having a safe place. And this particular person had been through domestic violence. She understood right where we were, and she was there for us. And from that, we went into shelter, and we spent 4 months underground doing what we needed to do to stay alive. So
I'm going to bring Marianne back on. Hold on one second. Marianne, 1 second. Our phone number, please call in, is 516-531-9643. 516-531-9643. We have an incredible guest with us this evening, Carissa Daniels, who has never gave up and has come so far in her hell to where she is out there helping others and helping save lives and get women the help they need. Please call in 516-531-9643, or I hope you're listening live at blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. Marianne, anything you want to mention to say to Carissa?
Oh, I'm just glad she's keeping going, and you know, her strength is amazing. You know, I'm glad she's speaking out and giving hope to other people.
You know. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so many people are stuck in situations that they don't know how to get out of.
And that's why I tell my story. It's not because of anything else, but it's because I didn't know. And if somebody can hear my story and the light bulb comes on and they know, then it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's worth it. I mean, even though it can be tiring telling your story, but at least, you know, you'll reach your, you know, people, a couple of people, and then they'll tell other people, and, you know, word will get around, and you'll be helping a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Word of mouth is an amazing thing, because just because you're in one place at the moment and then you see a friend going through something, and that pops in your head, and guess what? You know, you've created change, and you've helped somebody in a moment that they needed help and wouldn't have it otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Or it's people that have, like, talked to someone, but that person has a friend that's going through it. You know, that's happened too.
Absolutely.
So, you're doing a good job.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm just sorry you went through all that.
Well, it was no fun going through, but I think there's a greater purpose here at this point. This is why I'm still here, I believe. Because I should have been dead like six times over. I don't know if you've ever looked up the name Charles Robman Campbell, but I was assaulted and raped and held prisoner by that guy. Mm. And he later murdered three people we know of. We think there were more. And it's amazing that I got out of that situation. The more I think about it, the more I go, you know, this was just somebody up there was taking really good care of me and looked out for me, because I would not be here. And this is why I'm here, for my daughter and for this work, because I believe this is my calling, not just something I do. I think we each have something that is our something to do. And I found mine through all of this. So even though it was a nightmare, everything wasn't bad because some kind of good is now coming out of it.
Almost, most definitely.
Anything else, Marianne, you want to add? Because we have another caller.
Oh, go ahead. No, I'm listening. I'm just, you know.
Thank you. Thanks for being a support. I appreciate it. We have Kelly from Maine. She's another advocate.
Hi.
Kelly. Hey, how you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good.
You guys know each other? Did you, are you the one that tagged Carissa? Somebody tagged Carissa in one of my shows.
It wasn't me. I tagged Jen and I know each other, but I don't know Carissa.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
Jen's
Carissa,
listening. She's go on.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and I do some advocacy work in Maine, and I have some Facebook pages with Courage Comes Freedom on Instagram. And, you know, I've done quite a bit of stuff, but you've turned your pain into a purpose, and that is
exactly.
Amazing. I just can't thank you enough for sharing your story and being brave when so many women, it takes so long to get them to bring and find their voice.
You have your own thing. You should be proud of yourself.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. But I'm inspired by other people too and their stories. And I'm just so glad that it's, you know, my situation was back in 2005 before Facebook probably even came out. So social media has been huge and networking with everybody. And Carissa, I just want to say thank you. Like, I can't imagine coming from child abuse and then being with somebody that's so heinous, I guess is the word, but just demonic, it sounds like, or sociopathic, who's killed somebody. Oh, my God. Ooh. I'm almost speechless on this podcast listening to you, but I just wanted to say thank you. And on a daily basis, do you find, if you don't mind me asking, do you find yourself still having triggers that you have to be aware of, and how do you handle that?
Yeah, for me, a lot of it when I first started doing my work online, I was going through not one, not two, but three different types of trauma-related counseling.
Yeah.
And that was a godsend. I did that for probably about the first 2 years. And between that and because I was doing what I was doing, I was constantly sharing my story and saying, okay, this is what I went through. You can do this. Here's how. And asking questions and helping people to see things from an aspect of a survivor. And because I was able to do all of that, the combination of everything has really helped me a lot. It hasn't been a perfect situation. For me, it hasn't been until the last, I'm guessing, I don't know, it might be 4 years. That I have been able to talk about the Campbell situation.
Okay.
Because that was buried so deep inside of me that I was not opening that can of worms for anything. Well, now I'm ready to open the can of worms, and he's dead. He can't hurt me or my daughter.
Oh, there.
One of his other victims was able to testify against him in court. He served time and got time off for good behavior that never should have happened. Got out and immediately, from what we can tell, within the next few months he was in doing work release. That's when he ran into me. And after my situation, he was obviously planning because he went back to his previous victim. He killed her, killed her best friend, who was her neighbor, and he killed her daughter, who was at the time like 7.
I can relate
to that. It was
a very
bad situation.
I can relate a little bit. I was just going to say, as far as a prison, when my abuser went to prison, they got ready. He had a 10-year sentence, and he did 4.5 years. And in Maine, when they got ready to release him because he had good time, like what your abuser did, the prison that was literally a minimum security, and it was 3 miles from my home. And they put him there where he could literally walk off from the prison. And once he got out of prison, he reoffended. But I literally had to petition the attorney general to have Department of Corrections move him. So I'm thankful, and I'm just glad that you don't have to live in that fear anymore, because it's just something I find sometimes it's very healing telling my story, but triggers do come up. So I still wrestle with that a little bit. Oh, but,
and I would encourage you.
Go on.
I was just going to say, I would highly encourage you to get with a trauma therapy counselor.
Yeah, I've done that.
Spend some time there.
I've done that. I've heard something about EMDR. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with that.
Very good. Yes,
my son
did that. Yeah.
They don't have in my area, in Maine, it's so small, they don't have a trained clinician up here, at least in my small town area. I would probably have to drive maybe 2 or 3 hours. But is it something that, I don't know if you know enough about it, or because I didn't find that.
It can be helpful. The main thing that you need to know about that is if you have complex post-traumatic stress, which is different than plain PTSD. It can cause other problems. So just know that and ask questions. That's the big thing, is be fully informed, ask questions. Let them know enough of your situation once you know that they're a trauma-informed provider.
It's been 11 years, so.
You know who you could reach out to, Mark, Dr. Mark Roseman, Kelly?
What's
he's
his name?
On my show also. Mark Roseman.
Yeah.
Dr. Mark Roseman. Reach out to him. He has, I think in Connecticut, I know down here, treatment facilities. And they do group virtual therapy. He may know more about it. I mean, he could definitely direct you, and I know he knows a lot more about it. Reach out to
Wonderful. It's been 11 years, and I've, you know, because of doing advocacy work, it's been very healing for me. I just need to be aware sometimes of the triggers, and when I see the pictures, obviously we all do with PTSD. But I will look that up, Bailey, and thank you, Carissa, for...
He has a whole website.
He does. Okay.
If you go through my shows... either on SoundCloud or on Blog Talk Radio, or go through the ones I sent you. I can't remember which one it was. Preserving Family Ties, maybe? It was one of those shows that on there is his website and all his information. But even if you Google him, you'll find information on him.
Okay.
But I know it helped my son.
May I ask one more question of Carissa? In Maine, I went to the local shelter. It was like a safe home, and then I was put back into my own community. So when you went underground, I found that in my treatment, that when my abuser was getting out of prison, they did what was called a safety meeting. Well, the safety meeting is basically for me to just call 911. There was no relocating me or letting him know. There was not an offer back then for me. So did you find it difficult to go underground until he was gone? I mean, did they have that resource for you, or did you have to do that on your own? It sounds like you did that without...
I had to do that on my own, and that's something that I think we really need to get out to victims.
Yes.
Is when they're dealing with the domestic violence shelter, if that's what you feel is going to keep you the safest, you're the one who knows your situation the best of anybody.
Right.
And if that's what you feel you need to do, ask your shelter program and say, you know, I think I need to move. How do I go about that?
Well, yeah, what they offered was, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know it depends on the state, too. I'm on the West Coast. And
okay,
I'll be blunt. I'm in Washington.
Yeah, okay.
Washington
as far as part of it can be.
Yeah, pretty much. But Washington is one of the best places when it comes to a lot of this stuff. So I kind of had an advantage in that. But trick is that if you start asking and you say, you know, in order to really be safe, I need to move. How can I do that safely?
Right.
The police are supposed to give you the information to be able to help you with it.
Right. I was hoping they would put a GPS bracelet on this man because he's violent. And the funds are limited. The shelters are closed down, even years ago.
Right.
But they didn't even have a GPS. They have that now. They're putting GPS anklets on some repeat offenders. But I just thought a safety meeting, that it's just a matter of me calling 911. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's not a safety
plan. I didn't feel very safe. And they offered for me to get a P.O. box. Yep, and they offered for a P.O. box to change my address.
Well,
if they have an ACP program, address confidentiality program, that can be helpful.
Yes.
But you have to do it in conjunction with moving.
Moving,
and they should have been on that and said, you know what, we need to move you to a place that you haven't been before, where you will be safe, and then we'll add you to ACP, and that will keep your address on the down low. And
you get a new Social Security card. You can get a new Social Security number. This was my biggest mistake when I moved. Because my phone number, have it 15 years, it's my business, and most of my clients are out of the state. I didn't want to change that. So that I couldn't change. But I was given the option through the DA's office. They gave me paperwork to fill out to be able to not have my address listed anywhere, change my Social Security number. That's all done through the Victims Advocacy Office in the DA, from the DA. Am I correct?
Right.
Carissa?
A lot of it is. Sometimes it depends on the state because each state has their own rules about the whole thing. One thing you do need to know, if you decide to do a sealed change, that means nothing will be out there under your old name, Social Security number, or anything else. If you decide to do a sealed name change, you will have to stay underground in shelter for anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. And what happens during that 6 months to 2 years is you essentially die. They issue a certificate.
Jesus.
You lose everything, medical records, school records, everything.
So I would have had this. I'd have to sell my home
well,
if that's the situation.
Is that every state?
Yeah.
Is that in every state, though? Is in, Chris, I don't know if
that
is
how
every state
a
because
sealed name change is handled.
A sealed name
for
change.
A sealed
oh.
one. A sealed one basically says it's not going to be out there where it's easily accessible.
Okay.
Right. See, you
and
don't have to
have
necessarily do a name change. You could do just address, an address, you know, a sealed, like your address is not posted anywhere, listed anywhere.
Right.
Even,
that's
I
what
don't know how,
is
they do
about.
And I'm just,
yeah,
and I'm just asking, though, I mean, I own my own home, and my abuser is literally like 3 miles down the street from me. He's got a new girlfriend, and he's reoffended. But I've owned my home for so long, and he's doing his own thing right now. And I just was curious. Another question is: does your state have a violent offender registry?
We are actually working towards getting one. That's actually
everybody
one of my current projects. Is
oh, really?
A gentleman who lost family members because of that. Yes.
Oh, yes. Great.
We have to
well,
do that everywhere.
Well, it's been my pleasure talking
to
you.
We have to get this done everywhere. Yeah.
Thank you,
for
Bailey.
Calling in,
Kelly. And yes, and thank you, Carissa. And I'm going to continue listening. I'm sorry I wasn't there for the first 45 minutes.
It's fine.
But
no worries.
It's amazing.
The show is
out
there.
So amazing. Okay, I'm going to get back to listening.
Good to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. I'm going to bring Marianne on in a second. I just wanted to, Kelly was saying that she gets triggered. You know, when I talk about my story, it wasn't violent like hers, as violent as hers. And I'm not going to downgrade what I went through, but I, at this point, I'm so numb from it that it's like I'm talking about someone else. Like I've really healed, and talking about shelters, when I was in the work in the beginning, because my whole situation just happened out of the blue. It was slow coming, but I thought that my marriage was okay. I mean, I knew it wasn't normal, but didn't think it was domestic violence. I didn't even know what that was. And, when it all blew up and I left the home, and I was staying at my parents' home and my kids would see my kids every day and, you know, be around the house, but not sleep there. So I started doing my research, and I found a shelter not far from my parents, and that's where they had group therapy, and the different levels and different kind of classes. And I tell this to everybody: if you find, and I don't know what it's like now because I haven't been back there in quite some time, but if you find group therapy, good group therapy, and a lot of them are held in shelters, so you have to go through a whole screening process, but it saved my life, because you start, especially when you don't realize you're a victim of domestic violence, you listen to other people's stories, and you're like, oh my gosh, I went through that. Oh my gosh. Like, you start relating, and talking about going under, there was a woman there that had to do that. I mean, this man had her husband, I think, or boyfriend had locked her in the barn, and she was there for months until somebody found her, and she literally had to go under. I mean, she had plastic surgery, everything. She had to change her name, the works. I mean, I met I learned so much from these people, and it's the beginning of your healing. I met my therapist there. She was an intern at the time. She's my therapist now for 6 years. I think she'll be my therapist forever. But sharing your story is definitely healing. The thing that triggers me is going through police reports.
because I have 3 years worth of police reports, and that they failed me.
Right.
And there's so many things in there that are written that are lies, and those, because I'm trying to write a book also of the mm-hmm. the mistakes I made, you know, mistakes that people shouldn't make, or, you know, how to deal with things that, how I would deal with things differently had I known.
Right.
So that's basically I start looking at it and I get so angry and I re-victimize myself. And I've actually even called them and I'm like, how come it says this isn't this and you didn't do anything? Or how come, you know, like I question, they're like, well, you can come and face those sergeants or those cops or whatever, and you can ask them. I'm like, what, so I should re-victimize myself? No way.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be any help at all.
I said, I'll just put all your names in my book because it's public record. That's all. For your sloppy work. That's all.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. But
well, we need to talk some more, because I think one of the things that this kind of opens the door to is to legislate to better protect victims.
So that's
and
where I
that's what I'm really
is,
into. That's what I that's really a huge part of my passion.
That's what
because
I want to get. I want love to get involved in
that. What
happened
to you should never have happened. And yes,
of course
cops
not.
Need good training, and they don't
training.
Have it.
No,
there
and
is...
I want to train them. That's my dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really excellent idea. There are stock grant funds out there to be
I
able
know.
To train them.
VOCA.
And
have you ever
we
heard
have
of
to
VOCA?
Get to VOCA? That point. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of VOCA? VOCA?
Yes.
Are they national? Are they, I mean, they throughout the U.S.?
Yes, I believe they are national. And that's one of the organizations out there that I would suggest getting in touch with. You might also get in touch with the Coalition. They can be really helpful. I know that in Washington State, they work really closely with both the state and the national legislature. My story has been told on the floor of the United States Senate during debate on the Violence Against Women Act in 2012 and 2013, before it was passed the last time. And now I'm kind of pushing them that, guys, you've got to do this. Lives are at stake. So I'm trying to push on that. I also work on the state level with it. And I would really encourage you to look at both training cops, and there are actual programs out there. This might be something for you to research. Seattle has one that has victim advocates that volunteer with the police department.
I know.
There are other states that have that in other areas as well. But Seattle has a really good program. I've actually spoken at their program. That's how I know.
So that's
what
I wanted to do. So to do that in the police department, you have to, in order to speak, you can't volunteer in the police department. You can volunteer for the DA in Florida, DA's office as a victim advocate. But in the police department, if you want to work there, you have to have certain degrees. But in order to share your stories when they are training them, when they are going to a training, you have to be under you have to be sponsored by an organization.
Okay.
That's
where
the
getting
I've
involved
done.
With a state coalition could be really helpful for you.
So
because
so
they
I'm
can recommend you to do things. That's how I got connected, both for speaking at the press conference done by Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell that led to my invite to D.C. and led to my story being told. That all happened because of the Washington State Coalition's invitation to me. So when you hook up with a state coalition, they can help you open doors
and get into places you might not be able to get in otherwise.
So,
and they can also work with you to craft what you're working on. So, for example, if you're working on a specific bill that's going to do something, they can actually sit down with you and say, okay, what are you thinking as far as a script for this? I've testified at judicial hearings before. And one of the things that I did, we sat down and we said, okay, we need to craft a script for you because that's going to make it the easiest and that'll be the least stress. And that's what we wound up doing. But it's neat because you can work with them and they will get you indoors you couldn't get in otherwise and help you to be able to do it at the level that it needs to be done. So that's what I would recommend.
So there are a few organizations, I snapped pictures of them, where I have to them again. One of them is the Coalition Conference on Crime Against Women, CCAW, and they're having a conference in July, and you can register to be a part of it. I think they have workshops or some stuff there. That was one of them. And the other one just, there was, NCVLI, National Crime Victim Law Institute.org. They want to hear from victims, but it's also, a collaboration between community-based and system-based advocates and other professionals. And they're vital for a trauma-informed response that fully protects the rights of survivors. That's like one of the things that they do. So there are a lot of organizations out there that really want victims to get involved and start advocating and, you know, getting more, because unless you can learn so many things by the textbook or from professionals, but if you have never walked the walk or have never been failed by the system, you don't really know. There's so much more to it.
Exactly.
You recognize the things that the changes that need to be made, and you get to show them what it's like for a victim. You know, you're sharing what, you know, you're putting them in your shoes, basically.
Exactly. What needs to happen.
Yeah. Right. Let me bring Marianne on. I want to just give out our number. We have 20 minutes left. It's 516-531-9643. 516-531-9643. We have an incredible guest on tonight, Carissa Daniels, who is a survivor, and she has really come from hell and, you know, is an amazing advocate now and helping other people, survivors of domestic violence. You can learn a lot from her. I will have this downloaded on to SoundCloud later on. If you want to look it up, Never Give Up Show, or we're on blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. Marianne, anything you'd like to add or share with or ask Carissa?
Well, I had a question. I think I know what the answer is, but when you have, you know, a person threatening you or, you know, they'll threaten you and hang up the phone and you've got to call the state police, they'll tell you they can't do anything until they're at your doorstep, until they're doing something to you, then they can react. But why can't they just go to that person's house and sit down and have a talk with them?
the way our system works has huge, yeah, they should. But the way our system works, it doesn't work a lot of the time. One thing, if they're threatening you by phone, there's actually a procedure that you can go through that will stop it. And you won't have to do anything other than make sure that you tell them that you do not want contact, do not call me, do not anything. Once you've gone on record and done that, you contact your local phone company, whether that's Verizon if you have a cell phone or whether it's somebody else if you have a landline. Contact your phone company. And there's actually an office that handles harassment calls. And what they will do then is they will go after them. They will keep track and they will say, okay, we're taking this guy to court. And they will get their attorney in on it, and it's out of your hands. And they will stop it.
It depends where you live. It every state handles things differently. I'm telling you, I went through this. I mean, through texts. You know, people can call you from different numbers, or they can call you from private.
Yes.
But what I would do is I would record. If you suspect that they're calling you, I would record the phone call.
The other thing that you can do is you can go to a system, a free one is Google Voice, but you can set up a separate phone line, and in doing that, you don't answer that phone line anymore at all. You only answer your new line. You can have your business calls transferred to the new line, but what will happen is the abuser has the old line, so when he leaves his garbage on the line, guess what? They've got him.
That's good.
Always record everything.
Yes.
Right.
That helps so much. Yeah. That evidence of everything is so important to document everything.
A few of those phone calls can get you a restraining order.
Yep. Exactly.
Unfortunately, it takes a few. It should never take for them to have to show... If the cops tell you we can't do anything until he shows up at your door, they're not doing their job. They can get sued. Because if he shows up at your door with a gun, God forbid, they're screwed. Stalking and harassment and cyber stalking and harassment is a crime.
Exactly.
That's where my cops went wrong, was because I was getting hundreds and hundreds of texts. So they were from fake numbers, but it was a history and a pattern, and that's all you needed, with an intent to harm. Whether you can Google the law in Pennsylvania. Is that where you are? PA,
yeah.
Whatever. Google the law of stalking and harassment or phone calls or whatever. You can't even imagine what will pop up, all the statures and all that stuff. And if you get
them
on a recording. If you get him on a record, I knew the laws. I had the cops come in my house, and I would show them the law. How do you know it's him? Okay, fine. I'll respond. I responded. This is after like the 100th or 500th text. I responded, and of course, my ex responded back. And he's like, well, you just instigated it. Well, I just showed you. I'm going to prove it's him. Then I found out that cop was a rookie, but his sergeant was standing right there. I mean, it was insane. I mean, I knew the laws inside and out. It is what it is.
Oh.
You know, you live and you learn, and you're out there to help others. And from going through that, Kelly's friend, Jen, who came to me through doing the show with Marianne, actually, oh, my God. She is like the pro on – she's like me. I mean, I still have the text on my phone going back 6 years, or printed out or saved on the computer. I have it like in the emails and everything. I still have everything, files and files. But, you know, unfortunately, the state she lives in is horrific with laws. And why do we have laws? to follow through with them. If you don't follow through, why do we have laws? That's my complaint.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need to force them to follow through. But if you don't do anything, Marianne, and God forbid something happens, that's on you. You know what I'm saying? Because, and whoever it is, I don't know whether it was the you know, somebody, you know, your person you were married to, whatever, whoever it was, whether it's anybody, if you don't report it, and God forbid something happens, like I still report things, even though I know nothing's going to happen, at least I reported it, and I have a paper trail. Because then it's on them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the paper trail is a tool that you can use both now and in the future.
Right.
And that's why it's important. If he is calling, the other thing you can do is you can log every single one of those calls. Sit down and write out this day, this time, this number he called from, this is what happened. And log every single one of those. That becomes evidence that, once again, you can use in court.
Right. And you don't need a lawyer. You got to get a police report. You got to file for a restraining order. And then you can go to, then hopefully you can go to the DA.
And if they won't fill out the police report for you, have them at least do an information-only report.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as hefty, but it is a help, and it does document, and you can use it later.
Right. And then you can go to the judge with that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, I'm a pro at all this stuff. If you ever have questions, yeah. Unfortunately, I just got a threatening text last week that had me shaking, literally.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. I haven't done anything yet. I mean, I left a message with there's a case already in the DA's office. Who knows if they're going to do anything? Because I have a restraining order, so there's been violations. But
yes.
Who knows
then
whether
if there have been a bunch of violations, they should be acting, but Lord only knows, as we
right.
all know.
Well, in your restraining order, and the detective showed me this, because who reads the restraining order? Because it's a book. It's like a booklet. Or at least my original one was. Then I got an extended one. And he showed me in there all the things, what you should do if it's violated. And you have to go to court, fill out an affidavit with all your proof. And you go back to the judge and you say, look, he violated it. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Because the judge has more power than anybody. He's the one that gave it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, Marianne?
Oh, no. That was my only question. Thank you so much.
Okay. I really appreciate that you called in, and we'll try and get back to you shortly. I'm going to bring Kelly back on because I'm sure she has a question about this.
Hi. Kelly. So, Bailey, this is really interesting. And Carissa, on behalf of Jen, because she submitted her stuff last October, I was told today, I went to the Sheriff's Department to put a citizen's complaint in. And I was told that the state of Maine will not enforce Connecticut's bail conditions on her abuser. And then he asked me, when I let him listen to one of the recordings, because the detective appears doing nothing, letting this guy run around loose in this area. He listened to the recording, and this sergeant said to me, well, did he know he was being recorded? Is that not admissible? I mean, she's trying to make a record and document.
First thing on all of this. She has a restraining order or an order of protection?
Yes.
Okay.
In,
you got him
in
right
Connecticut.
There. You got him right there because...
But she has it and can... Is it... But it goes
for everywhere.
It doesn't
matter where she's got it. It doesn't
matter
where...
Thank you.
It is to be utilized wherever she is. They can't change that. That is the law on the federal level.
He literally lied to me, and
You have to print. I sent Jen the laws of breaking a violating restraining order.
Right.
She has all the laws in the email.
Well, when I went in there today, though, like I spoke with the sergeant and said, "Look, you're detective of domestic violence. He's doing nothing since October. He's not being responsive. He's too busy and high profile." And but he was more concerned about, well, we can't enforce those conditions if he broke his bail conditions.
Baloney.
That's Connecticut. And then he tells me, was this a guy, does he know he was recorded? Not realizing she's a victim and that she's just now taught. He's like, and she's just now bringing this up? Like, I really couldn't believe he was saying these things to me.
Oh, I can believe it, sadly.
They can go back 6 years from what I understand. So I did advocate for her today, and she did not get a call from them, and I hope that she
they
does,
are
but I'm
so
putting in a complaint.
By the way, Kelly, don't. They're so crooked over there in Connecticut and Maine. I can't believe it.
So I should continue to put that complaint in
up.
Again, then, just so it's documented.
Yeah.
I would say.
Go to his captain.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I went to the sheriff.
And climb the chain.
Okay,
yeah,
document
that
time
I
chain.
That's
I'll
what
do
I
the
did.
Proper steps of chain of command, absolutely.
Exactly.
Did she ever get rid of her attorney?
She did fire her attorney. She wrote a really nice letter. I'm so excited about that. But I'm up here in Maine, you know, trying to push and get, because where he was removed from another woman's home, he violated his conditions, and this cop was, like, looking at me. Don't put a complaint in. Just have a conversation with the detective. And no, you're not doing your job. You don't understand.
Wow.
She's fearful of her life, and you're telling me you can't enforce conditions in another state. I'm just baffled. But I will follow through and make it because it's on record then, because if something happens to her, then they're liable.
Oh, totally.
I would imagine what he said.
Hello, just the videos from the courtroom. Can I talk about that for a split second? Can I tell her what I did?
Yeah.
I'm going to say this very quickly, unless you want to say something, talk about something else, Carissa.
No, I'm all set. I just wanted to bring that up, if that was a real thing or not.
You have to send me his information. Can you send me?
Yes.
So I can file a complaint.
Yes, he gave me the papers to file, and he's sitting there so professional and telling me, well, I hope you had a better interaction with us today. No, so now I'm really upset that I was lied to. But
Get me that attorney's info. Get me that attorney's info. I'm filing. I told him I was filing a complaint. I'm filing a complaint.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
Carissa, did you want to say anything else? Because I want to tell you what I did, how crazy I could be when I get angry at a. Do you mind if I say this, or is there something else you'd like to talk about?
No, go ahead. Please.
All right. So basically, this woman, Jen, has been tortured by this psychopath for years. She knows him since she's a little girl. They never married, but they live together, whatever. It's a long story, but he is a monster, literally. And she has so many charges against him. And one detective actually sat with her and she got a restraining order, but he never violates anything. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've seen everything, okay? This girl has sent me everything. And they never violate him. He's still out there. So there was a virtual court date where he had to plead, and, you know, it was open to the public, and I got on, Kelly got on, Kelly spoke for Jen, she's her advocate, and you know, Jen's very sweet girl, but been through hell, and she had a doctor's appointment that she waited a year for that she canceled. okay? I had to be somewhere. Kelly had to be somewhere. We were all there. And this guy is like, I don't have Wi-Fi, or I'm not home yet. Or he kept calling his attorney, making excuses why he's not logging on. The judge is like, okay, I have to go into another courtroom. I'll come back and see if the guy shows up. This is like the fourth time he did this, okay? And here he's supposed to be pleading, right?
Right.
Why she had an attorney, she did not need an attorney. She needed the DA's office, who is there. They're supposed to represent her, right? Okay. I'm watching her attorney sit there, okay? He couldn't see me. He didn't know my name. And it was a Zoom. And I'm like, friggin' schmuck is sitting there. And he's like, oh, we're going to have to postpone this. I got to go, whatever. It's like half an hour, 30 minutes. So Kelly's like, well, can't you put for the record that this is the fourth time that he's done this?
Yeah.
You know, this is unfair.
This
you know,
is contempt.
Why are we pussyfooting around this criminal? Right.
Yeah. What you're describing is he is in contempt and refusing to show up four times. Is more than
five. This was the fifth time.
Haul his little butt to jail.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm watching this schmuck of a criminal attorney that she met in court and said, "I'll take your case pro bono." I don't know why. Okay. But he was friends with the other attorney. That I found that after. Anyway, I said, "Kelly, Jen, please give me his number. I have to text him. Do you mind?" She goes, "No." I rip him. Okay? I ripped this guy. And I said, "Yeah, I'm watching you." Because he didn't know who I was. But I did it from my real number. It was stupid of me, which I don't care. I could have done it from a fake number. And he goes, "Could we bring the judge in right now?" Cursing me back, okay? He goes, "I want to put something on the record. That this and this phone number just threatened." I didn't threaten him. I know better. This and this phone number should not be allowed back in this courtroom again. And they threatened that they're going to file a complaint against me. I want this for the record. That he put on the record.
But he wouldn't.
And I'm videotaping it.
Contempt on that.
I was videotaping him. So if you're listening, Mr. Attorney, criminal attorney, who is a criminal, I mean, I cursed the shit out of him. Excuse my language. I really gave – I was so angry for her that, you know, but this is – it's so broken. So anyway, I felt like that's why – so – She spoke to other professionals who I've had on my show, and they said, you do not need an attorney. The DA is representing you, and they should be doing the job. Because I know I didn't have an attorney. I went with the DA or the ADA, and I had a victim's advocate when he pled, and I had a say in the pleading, and that was the end of it. And I'm talking about my ex. So... I was so angry for her that I just ripped him, and that was it. I mean, it was like, you know, she knows the laws better, and she's doing more than and Kelly's doing more, and the end. Anyway, we have like 30 seconds left. If you want to just say anything, I want to say that Kathy, the one that was on before, she's the one that connected us, Kathy Jones.
Yes,
she's the one that tagged you. And that's how, so thank Kathy for connecting us. I'm sorry for taking up the last few minutes, but I wanted to tell you, you know, I was proud of myself for sticking up for someone who was vulnerable and exhausted and been through hell, and it's not fair. Kelly was there sticking up for her. I was there, you know, we were all there, and, you know, enough is enough. Attorney's not doing their job. Bye bye. Any
And that's where we need to focus on changing these laws. So that's where we're going to go.
Well, you know, I'm so glad that you came on. There's so many more things I would love to discuss with you. I'll email you or message you. Do you want to give out your website again or something? You said there was a website.
Well, there is a website, but there's nothing up yet. It's still in process. It will be CarissaDaniels.com. It's not there yet. It should be shortly.
Okay. And I will invite Carissa to some of the groups, so whoever's listening, or you can listen to the show, or, you know, you can find her on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for being a guest on my show tonight. I hope you feel like you got most of your story out. I think we will have reached someone. I believe we will. And that's what we're here for, to reach people. Nobody has to suffer. Nobody has to live in fear. And we are going to end that. So thank you, Carissa, for being on the show tonight. Thank you, Marianne, for always supporting me. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to bring you back on. Kelly, for calling in. Kathy, for calling in. And for our listeners out there, again, I will post this on SoundCloud tonight, and I'll send you the link. It's easier to listen to. And thank you, Joe Koch, for giving me the Blog Talk radio time. Thank you, Charlie, for setting me up and being my co-host up until recently. And thank you again to all of our listeners and supporters out there. And we are always here to help you. And please never give up. There's always hope. Have a wonderful night.
With a little perseverance, you can get things done. Conquered some, and nobody wants to know you now. And nobody wants to show you how. No one